In an earlier podcast, we covered the basics of building a circuit, getting the positive feedback from doing it, fault checking it, and actually building a little resistor and having a look at that with voltmeters and ammeters. Quite a big thing to do, to set up a whole lot of preliminary stuff. And now we're going to look at building a circuit, not just an ordinary circuit, but a circuit which will basically draw people in and teach them electronics as they try and struggle to understand it. How can that be? Well, this is Peter Hill Explains, and I'll go into the how that circuit is and sort of the background for how I stumbled across it. I quite literally stumbled across the phenomena and the learning psychology behind it all. So let's, before you go, people are obviously going to wonder what sort of circuit it is. So it's a simple circuit. It's a power source, and can I recommend a digital power supply which can supply either constant voltage or constant power. And aside from that, you're going to create a hell of a lot of confusion as people trying to work out what batteries are and power sources are. If it explicitly does so, you know it goes. But you can, of course, use just a normal power supply. And you hook up a series circuit of two resistors, but they're and what's going on? Well, obviously, you'll know from the electronics and the school that you teach about voltage and current and all these laws. But before that happens, they're not going to be just normal resistors. They're going to be the special, what I call Hill's glow and blow resistors. So you've got a general type of resistor, but these are a special type of resistor that, on a reasonable current, they heat up. And so the resistance varies. You have nichrome wire, and as it heats up, the resistance builds up. And then if you blow it, you reduce the resistance. It's no longer as hot. The temperature's away. It reduces in temperature, and the resistance drops. And so this is a special type of resistance because it's exquisitely sensitive to student input. It's a concept that they get directly to touch rather than indirectly through measurements and books and graphs and, oh, you've got it right. This is something where you directly interact with it. I'll just quickly describe the circuit. So you set the circuit up, and look, I'll give some sort of background to the advice that I'm giving. So I'm not giving it as authority, I'm giving it as general advice. You set this up as a demonstration with two blow and glow resistors and a thing. You light it up, and you literally do light it up. You switch it on, and you can actually see the current going through because these resistors glow red, possibly even white hot. White hot's probably a bit excessive. Tone it down if it does. And so you've got resistor one and resistor two. Now, I'm going to say what we do is we blow resistor one. So you blow resistor one. What happens to resistor two? This is a big question. What happens to resistor two? They're the same constructions, the same resistance. What happens to resistor two? Now, at this point in time, if you want to, you can switch off the podcast to pause, come up with your answer, and then I'll tell you what the answer. I should have a bit of occasional music at this point in time for you to think. Well, the answer is that when you blow on resistor one, that will not be as hot. It will reduce in resistance, and with reduced resistance, there's an opportunity for more current to flow, and there's a less voltage drop across there. The potential difference, as it's called. Some people really, people have this real hatred of the word voltage, but then it's in all common vernacular. People want to say potential difference, and you can talk about that, but really have that as a footnote afterwards, as a by the way, don't use this word. So the potential difference drops over resistor one. It increases over resistor two, the amount of power put out by resistor two increases. So what will happen is you'll blow resistor one, and resistor two will get hotter. And then, just to check it out, people looking at it, people will then say, well, can we check what happens if you blow resistor two? And you'll see the effect. And this is very important in learning. Who knows what goes in people's heads? Well, hopefully we do as teachers, getting a bit of experience up there. But really, you need, rather than just theory and gusto, you need actually experience for it. So the idea of this is that you've got something, and the steps are the students to go away and reproduce it. So you just set the circuit up, and they have to look at the circuit, draw it, and be able to reproduce it, reproduce the effect, and then to try and hypothesize what's going on, you know, to work out what's going on, they have the opportunity to put in ammeters and voltmeters to work out what the resistance is. So this is an immediate result and problem-solving effect. It's with ladders of degree of difficulty. One is to see if they can reproduce what's going on, probably use slightly different resistors if it's necessary, and then they have the opportunity to actually see that the current is the same at all points in the circuit, but the voltage can vary and differ in a way which explains what's going on, and you can give them certain information that the power given out by the resistor is V times I or I squared R, but they're not going to have exact access to R, and R is a variable feast. Very important, all these variable things here, and eventually they could do it, or put in standard resistors or power resistors, which don't do that. So that's the general learning activity. We'll just take a break before we go back and describe in a bit more detail how you would set up the ammeters and voltmeters. The important thing is that they've already learnt this in the previous thing, looking at a single blow and glow resistor. So the idea is they know how to do it, but just in case you haven't heard the previous podcast, we'll get back onto it. What I want to discuss is just the long, hard road of working out what's the premium learning experience. So depending on what your students are, so if they're a high achieving bookwork student, they'll you're not going to please all students. So there are some high complaining students, and if you haven't explained it right away, and all the teachers always explain everything right away, you'll be in trouble. But assume you don't have these students. If that's not case, you have discovery students, people who have a phenomenon and want to investigate it. You give them the tools to investigate, and they have the ability to do unusual things. So they might do something unusual like create a parallel circuit or various other aspects. So I've discovered that. Where have I sort of discovered the students' general misconceptions? I think this is being a lab demonstrator in university. Then I was up in Canberra in Questacon as a Questacon explainer for a number of years when the first Questacon opened. So Questacon is a science museum given by the Japanese government to Australia in Canberra for the celebration of our bicentenary, which is in 1988. So in 1788, the first fleet arrived, and the rest is white European history, all I can say. That's an example where you could see, I suppose, the impact. For me, was a fantastic insight, because you'd see people who have been taught by a rigorous textbook method make a set of very quick observations and get the prize. People who haven't taught by textbooks, they may not get as far, but they get a sort of broader understanding. So seeing lots of people through from different countries and different schools, you got this huge cross-section of them all coming to the same exhibits. And then the wording of the exhibits, the way the exhibits set up, were really critical to what the people learn. So indeed there were some good exhibits, some complex exhibits, and back then there were some exhibits with incorrect explanations. There's one, I think, on the third floor, which eventually they got. I went back with my kids and saw it year after year, but then this is 30 years, 20 years later, it's still there. And it was an important one. It's about a slit image, and they had put the word half-smoked mirror rather than half-silvered mirror. And I still remember going up there with other explainers, and the other explainer would say half-smoked mirror, and you would sort of discuss that it's wrong, but they would be a bit uncomfortable, and then a while later you'd hear these confused people as they said half-smoked. So it was another degree of insight to see that a poor explanation in the textbook really influences the way the teachers teach these things. Then again, also training in the army, infantry in the army, really a lot of it has to be hands-on, and that overview of a clear demonstration at the start, where people see things. Obviously, the military is a lot different, but look, basically setting up scenarios for people to solve. You set it up the first and let people observe and work together. So this is very much the very first idea of rather than overloading the brain with instructions and worksheets and things like that, it's really good to actually have people come up at the same time, have the group observe you having a pre-built circuit, and not explaining too much how it's built, but having how it's built being a question afterwards. Obviously, you identify what's the power supply and what's going on, but the observation of what do you think will happen, there's that I know what's happening. You have to basically shut up people. If they get the explanation too quickly, you get them to tell them to you after. You get this resentment if you don't allow people to tell you the explanation, even obviously though you know it yourself. You have to, if they want to tell it, to tell it to you privately, and if they've really understood, you set them a more advanced task. Let's get back to it. Should be ample provision of ammeters and voltmeters. The needle ones are really the best, because a needle one gives you an exact quantity, whereas a digital one, it's a little bit harder to process, and you can't see whether they're qualitatively the same. So the important thing is that there's probably three places that you can put ammeters, and ideally have three ammeters if you can possibly have it. They're three digital ammeters. It's easy enough to buy heaps of ammeters, but have them in such a way that you can actually see them one above the other. So this is just a small tip. If you have them stacked vertically above, people can actually see that they're the same. Whereas it's more slow if they're horizontal. Their eye moves horizontal, has to remember one to the other. But if they can see it vertically up, they can see. So you've got a needle which swings left to right, and another needle which swings left to right just above it. So if they can be arranged vertically above it, they can see it. And then yes, I should say something else. You do have the issue that you blow it and you'll see the needles move, and then it will swing back to equilibrium. You then have to have a situation where it's stable enough for them to see. So there is a device that I have had, which is basically a computer fan on a foam cup with a straw sticking out the back of it, and this can blow a constant rate of air and chill something down to a lower temperature. And the advantage of that is that you can increase it by moving close and further away. To power that up, that just depends on people's understanding. There's also I have seen once, but I haven't seen many times, a really miniature computer fan, the size of a coin, or a little bit bigger. So that they're rather cute. I can't remember what they were used for, and some sort of scientific equipment. I don't think I haven't seen them used in computers. I've seen them used in scientific computer equipment. They're out there, but for ease of use, this is by far the best. Oh, if I can give you a tip, it's far better to have a spacer and the fan underneath so they don't stick their fingers in it. It's just a small aspect. So in general, you set up a series of at least 3 ammeters in a row, and voltmeters now, and the actual circuitry there. The circuitry, again, still recommend is your own built conductors for them to build and put in if you've got the time. And this is definitely a class grade demonstration, and it's the ability to vary resistors, and it's this constant. It's the cognitive load of wiping out the blackboard and drawing another diagram and another load. It's easier for people to actually see if the only difference now is the same circuit, but I've changed that resistance. And what is happening with these currents? It's having everything cognitively out there set out. You may disagree with it, but I've just had all the years of experience. I'm not saying I'm better than anyone else, but I've just had to sit there and work through. And I think people who are learning just get the experience that they haven't learned and they've learned it. They don't see the different paths through or the different influences. If they've learned things in books in a very regimented way, how they do cancel things very quickly, and they get very satisfied they've learned things. But you look at the end of the day, they walk away and you see they've ticked the boxes, but they've missed all these other things that someone who hasn't learnt anything before, it's all new to them, they can see all these other nuances and aspects going through, and they're a bit more robust. People who haven't studied things, if it doesn't work, it's, you know, it could be them, what, you know, it's all, perhaps learning less is that, because it's got that self-doubt and that driving force. So just to recap, this is a pedicle explains with a glow and blow resistor built for the first time into a circuit, and using that to actually work out some of the circuit dynamics by actually making them dynamic. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, keep on thinking science, doing science, and eventually teaching science.